This episode is brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief. Welcome to The Last Storm. My name is Mark Flatt, and I'm calling in from the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. Today, as always, I'm joined by my brother Dave. He's calling in from Maryland at the banks of the Potomac River. Thanks for joining us. Here we go.
Spend too much time talking about the Kings game that we have tomorrow night at 8 Eastern, 7 Central. But this King team looks completely different from the last time that we saw them. How do you feel like we're going to fare against them, being that they are a team that's trying to put it together? They got a good coaching staff. They got good young players. How do you feel that this trade did for them? And do you think that this is something they can become better with just this season?
I think Sabonis is a really good player. We've seen him do a lot of really good things, and we know he's an all-star. So, I mean, I don't know if he's going to be able to lead them to a lot of wins right now, but we'll have our hands full, but I think we can get the win. SGA should be playing. I saw that Giddey won't be playing. I don't think Dort will be playing. So we're kind of in a spot right now where, you know, we want to get the win because SGA is out there, but you know, if we're not going to be full strength, it's going to be difficult.
They've lost their two games that they had to Denver, 115-110 and 128-110 since the All-Star break. But, you know, 1-5 over the last five games, four losses in a row. They've kind of struggled trying to find their identity. But I think this is a game that we can really come out, if we have the right players on the court, come out there and really do some great things, really mess some stuff up for them and make things, you know, difficult for Sabonis. So this could be something good.
Yeah, I'm pumped up about it. But, you know, you sent me something a little bit earlier that I wanted to get into. Let's talk about, you know, what you were talking about, the shooting guards in the league and how this move for SGA could actually be really good for his career. If we move him to the shooting guard, like, what were you saying? Like, he might be, what, top three shooting guard this year?
Well, you got to look at the shooting guards that are playing, you know, most of their time at shooting guard. And you look at Shea's impact, and you have to immediately wonder if Shea wouldn't be in the top five right away. As, you know, if they labeled him as a shooting guard on the rankings, I think that he would be labeled as a top five shooting guard in the league. Now, over as the point guard, that's a little bit more murky. There's no way that Shea's going to break the top five for the next couple of years in the league for point guards. And the reason is because that old guard that's happening, that's, you know, moving out, you got this like tweener guard that has a number of strong point guards there. And then you got the new guard. And really, where does Shea fit into that new guard point guard ranking? And that's Luka, you know, that's Trey. I mean, Trey Mann, not Trey Mann, you know, Trey from Atlanta.
Trey Young.
So, but that's the point, is like, it's hard to rank him in there. Like, where do you put him? And I constantly go back and forth with this, is like how would I rank Shea as not a Thunder fan, but as an NBA enthusiast? And it always comes down to, you know, 7 through 9. That's where I rank Shea. And that's the problem with the point guards. You're never going to be all NBA team with that. Just not. And so looking at it, I think this benefits Shea's career going to the shooting guard and making that easy slide over there, is because he's going to be fighting against guys like Booker for, you know, top three shooting guard, and CJ and McCollum and all these other guys that are, I would call, subpar superstars or subpar stars. Like, they can't lead a team by themselves, but Shea can. So, well, where does that rank Shea?
Like, the current rankings by Sporting News, which is, you know, whatever. But the idea here is that we'll see a drop off pretty significantly. So you got James Harden was the number one shooting guard coming into the season. Devin Booker, number two. Donovan Mitchell, number three. Bradley Beal, number four. Zach LaVine number 5, and CJ McCollum at number 6. So that's obviously, you know, really Klay Thompson was 7, so he's jumped up. But other than that, I think it's kind of an idea of what, where it's at.
And that's what I was saying there, is that like, Shea has made the movements. Like, if you look at the top 7, there's no way in the world, if he's known as a shooting guard, especially for a full season, we're talking starting next year, as a shooting guard, there's no way he doesn't come out there as a top 5 shooting guard off the bat because of what he brings to the table. And people were like, oh, I don't know about that. But I ask you, would you rather him or Zach LaVine? And that's no diss on, this is no diss on Zach LaVine, but we've seen what happens when Zach LaVine leads teams. And he's in the midst of something great happening in Chicago, but he's as a 2 or 3 guy. So again, like, this goes back to it, like, this is what we're seeing. We're seeing this emergence of point guards in this league that are coming, and it's really strong, and the shooting guards are weaker. And if I'm Shea and I'm his team, yes, I'm disappointed that Shea's not going to have the ball in his hands a lot. But I'm looking at it saying, hey, guys, this benefits Shea's career because he's going to get an easier time making all NBA team during this stretch. Because immediately, as a shooting guard, he's at least top, you know, 2 all NBA teams. So if he's, you know, 1 or 2 or even 3, what is it? The third team in the NBA, the third NBA team.
Yeah, third all NBA.
Yeah, like that's the thing. If he's even there, he still gets this massive boost in money. And that's what he's got to be looking at and got to get excited about, is that all-star, all this other stuff, it's starting to matter, because we're talking, what, like a $20-something million that he gets on the back end if he makes all NBA teams. So this has to be exciting to him, at least after the first initial blow of, hey, we're moving you off the ball, you know, like money, yeah. money.
Well, I mean, for SGA, if he's going to average double digit assists, which is something I'm not sure, you know, would be good for him, it's going to really hurt his offensive game. But as a point guard, you're judged not just by the points you score, but also by the assists you have. And so if he shifts all of a sudden, you know, and he can maybe, what do you think next year, if he starts at the 2 guard, what do you think he can average for the season point wise?
Oh, 25, 27.
Isn't that what he was doing, like 24 and a half this year? I mean, feel like he's a 28.
He's 23.2 right now.
Okay, so I feel like he's a 28 a night guy at the 2 guard. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's going to end up being consistently that throughout his career, but he's got a lot of shifting to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
He's got a lot of moving around to do. Like right now he's so comfortable being on the right-hand side because he can go straight to the center of the lane. You know,
right.
I want to see him use the left side more, you know, like it's his strong hand. And he, you know, yes, he does use it a lot going baseline. But man, I want to see it more. Like, he's so lethal on the right side of the bucket. If he opens that up to that left side, then yeah, we're talking, you know, 28, 29, 30 points a night, but that has to be like something that he's got to figure out and get used to.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I hadn't noticed it, but I'll keep an eye on that. But the truth is, at this stage with where Shea's at, like, there is a good chance that if he focuses in on scoring, he could be 30 points a night. Like, and that would lead the league in scoring over the last few years. I'm not sure if we've had, you know, I think sometimes Bradley Beal has averaged something like 33 or something like that. But I'm not exactly sure what the leading average is right now, but I'm pretty sure if he was over 30, he'd be right there, Dave. And I think he's got that level of offensive talent. And I think if he kind of just unleashes it and says, you know, drive and dish, you know, whenever the double team comes, that's a basketball thing. That's not necessarily a point guard thing, but understanding how to keep everybody involved by having spent so much time playing point guard is going to be really critical to his development as the team looks for him more on the offensive load. And obviously that opens up a big opportunity for Giddey to get out there and just run. And, you know, unfortunately we're not going to see him against the Kings, and we didn't see him last game, but, you know, it's been nice that we've had at least one of those two guys playing for quite a stretch now.
Yeah. And with Shea is that, to me, Sam Presti is one of the greats in getting players, especially young players, and convincing them to play a different role than they're used to. I love it, and I really hope that he does some miracles here because, you know, Shea's got to buy into it. I mean, wholeheartedly, yeah. He's got to buy into understanding that, you know, he's not going to be, you know, ending his career averaging 6-7 assists a game. You know, like he's going to average his career more points a game, but he's going to have to be okay with being that type of player. And that takes a lot of change in a player. Not all players can make that change, but I have faith that Shea is going to be able to do that and be able to do it very effectively because most of his NBA career, he's had to play that backup point guard role / sharing point guard role. I'm not too worried about it. I think Shea will be all right. So I'm kind of looking into that as saying, how far does Shea need to buy into this system? He's got to go all the way, man. This is not just like, you know, just the tip. You know what I'm saying? This is, you've got to be able to go all the way with buying into the system. And Shea has got to do that. And I look at it like this is the difference between us being a, you know, top three team in the West and us being a championship team is if Shea can buy into what we're trying to do in Oklahoma City. And I think he will. I think he's going to fit perfectly in there. I just think it's going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, a process, but the nice thing is if, you know, players are committed to winning and taking on a role that enables the team to be in the best position they can be to win, then, you know, we're going to see different things happen. And I heard Coach Daigneault talk about him attacking closeouts more and, you know, taking on that load and, you know, understanding that means quite a different thing than what we were asking him to do. So like you're saying, it's going to take adjustment, not just, you know, from positioning, but also psychological. And he's going to have to be more aggressive, understand that that's what we're asking from him. And it's going to be a fun process because, you know, with these guys, we know that the sky is the limit. But now, you know, we're looking at them taking on new challenges and eventually, this will be stuff that we look back at and say, you know, can you believe that we ever had that question? But right now, you know, we don't know how it's going to look in the final version. So that's what makes it so exciting.
Yeah, it's just part of the progression of a team is like we've already seen what's happened when Shea's been out there as the point guard and how when Shea got injured, all of a sudden it's like, wait a second here. Maybe we had this wrong and maybe Giddy is more ready than we thought he was ready. So let's give him the ball more. So again, the game plan is morphing as the season goes on. And we knew this was going to happen, you know, with some aspects of the game. We weren't too sure in the beginning how it would happen. We weren't too sure if it would be Josh Giddey that would be causing this or not. But I think that's the thing that's so important to say and so important to look at is Josh Giddey's taken over that role. He wasn't given it. He took that role over. And I love the fact that we have guys that are able to play defense out there and teach Shea and teach Josh how to properly play defense and really push these athletes that are much quicker with the ball than Shea would be. But Shea pushes these guys over towards Dort or over towards Isaiah, these other guys that are better at the defensive position. And I like how this is set up and how our defense is set up this way because it's really – We've seen it before with a lot of NBA teams, but as a unit, you work much better. And seeing that this is not just like, hey, everybody has their own man. We're not switching or we're switching and that's that. Like there's really a defensive mindset out here by committee. Shea pushes a guy to a certain side. This guy will step up, you know, whether it's Isaiah or it's Dort and steps up and takes over that position while Josh or whoever it is, Shea, you know, fades off to the left behind the corner to make sure he gets Dort's old guy. Like there's a system in here and it's really important to watch because just the way that they think, the mentality that they're going out there with is so far advanced for a young team. We haven't seen this before. So, you know, for us to say this is where it's going or this is where it's going to morph into, we don't know. All we can do is we can sit back, enjoy the ride and, you know, watch Coach and watch Sam, you know, completely change things that we like or say, hey, listen, we need to get this type of player in here because this is the way things are changing and how we can make things better. So there's going to be a lot of change. There's going to be a lot of morphing and I'm cool with that. It just takes a lot of time to get understanding of what's truly happening out there.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as like Giddey taking that position over, like that happened in a 10-game time span. It could have been shorter than that, and we didn't realize it, but by the end of it, it was such a whirlwind that it's kind of hard to think back to how things were before that happened. But before that, it was kind of like, I really feel like he was being patient. He didn't want to come out and do anything that would upset anybody, and so he was just kind of waiting and waiting. And then SGA goes down, and everybody kind of turns and looks at him and says, like, okay, you got to be the man. And from that time period, you know, we've kind of been launched into this whole new, you know, thing. Like, you know, when he first went down, we were like, hey, last time we saw SGA go down, we saw Giddey get a triple-double. You know, maybe he's capable of getting at least one more. You know, you said you thought he could get four while, you know, SGA was out. And I was like, well, one would be good enough. But, you know, here we are. He's got four now. And, you know, it's completely changed the franchise, really.
I mean, again, when you see a change happen before in your organization or any organization, it's glaring in the face. And the fact is that this went from Shea's team to Shea's and Dort's team, right? Into Shea, Dort's, and Josh's team. And like you said, that happened in 10 games. Yeah, you know, Josh was you know, popping in there and letting everybody know he was there once in a while, but not like he did in that 10 games. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen a teenager do this before. Right. I mean, we saw LeBron do some amazing things as a teenager. You know, we've seen some other Kevin Garnett, Sean Kemp just come out there and dominate as teenagers. But the reality is that watching what Josh did, I mean, that's next level shit on every fucking level. And you have to sit back and be able to appreciate that, because how many more times in our lifespan are we going to be able to see a player like this? And it doesn't even matter that he plays for Oklahoma City. It matters that this young man is changing the basketball game right in front of us. And he showed Oklahoma City a glimpse of what he could do in 10 games. And everybody's just like, oh my goodness, this is insane.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the idea that it can really unleash SGA is something that's really kind of like underestimated, because we've seen for a while that SGA can really, you know, help this team win in multiple ways. But, you know, when I think about him, like going out there and, you know, thinking like score first every single time, I get really excited about that. And when I think about what Giddey's been able to do, like, and how like his style of basketball has already begun this transition with the team, where we're seeing a lot more passing. Like, and even when he's not out there, this team has really kind of developed a bit of his identity, and that's really important to see. And as like you said, this team has kind of become his team in a way, as much as it is also SGA's. And I know that would even probably make Josh a little bit uncomfortable, right? Because he's really humble and he doesn't want to step on anybody's toes. But the reality is, you know, we watched all the games, and like basically what we've seen is a difference in the organization. And a lot of that is because the energy that Josh brings. And that what that means to me is that other guys are looking to find, you know, weak side passes. They're like, coach is always talking about rotating the ball. Josh makes it happen. And when the ball starts moving, it doesn't just stop. So he's a big part of what we've seen that's become like a new brand of offense for us. And it's been really fun. But like I said, early on, he was just waiting. He was just waiting. He didn't want to go out there and do anything. But all of a sudden, what we've seen is him turn it on. And now I'm ready for both of them to get back out there. But it's not going to happen for a little bit longer. We don't know how long. It's a hip injury. Dave, you've had hip injuries, you know, like this stuff, once it shows up, it doesn't go away unless you take care of it.
Yeah, a lot of resting, a lot of stretching, stuff like that will definitely help him out. Obviously, I'm sure he's getting some of the world's best treatment right now, so I got to keep that going on. But one thing I want to throw back at you is that you're talking about the way that we pass the ball. You know, we saw it yesterday or 2 days ago when we played against the Pacers. Their broadcast team talked about it. The second we start passing the ball around, they're like, oh my God, here we go again, passing us into the spin cycle. And that's really what happens here. When we pass that ball around, it happens so quickly that there's a guy left open for 3 or 4 seconds. It's almost like when a team gets an offensive rebound, right? Like, it throws everybody off, and typically you get a wide open shot on an offensive rebound because everybody's out of place. So trying to get the rebound. So it's the same thing that Josh does, is he starts that spin cycle or continues that spin cycle when the ball gets to him by very, very quick touch passes and different things like that he does, and it creates an open shot. And a lot of times he doesn't get the credits for the assist or the credit for, you know, the pass, because he's the hockey assist guy. He's the guy that passes it to the guy that he knows is going to pass it to the corner, that the young man or whoever is open at that point. So again, it's really been impressive to see how these guys are using Josh Giddey as a positive and essentially allowing him to be in that point guard position, because Shea is phenomenal at the point guard position. And the fact is that he is, a top 7 in the NBA right now, top 8 in the NBA. He is a great point guard. He is not chump change. But Shea as a shooting guard is next level. And I think if they can get him to buy into that, Josh Giddey moving into that more permanent role of point guard, you know, right now they have him listed as shooting guard because that's where he's played the majority of the minutes this year. But man, I can't say enough, when the ball is in his hands and he's directing the traffic, the ball is just flying. I mean, it's barely touching people's fingertips. It's in and out, and it's beautiful. It's something that you don't see a lot in the NBA.
Yeah, when you see Giddey out there making those passes happen, SGA drawing double teams, you know there's going to be people left open. And one thing I think that I've watched our team transition from 2016, when we made it to the conference finals and, you know, we were up 3-2 on the Warriors, is that Sam Presti wants all 5 players out on the court to be a threat to shoot and to be a threat when they are switching on defense. Because I noticed, you know, in that, you know, once we got up on that lead, Stephen Clay really picked on Steven Adams on the perimeter. Anytime that they would get him, they were going to shoot right over him because he wasn't capable of defending them. They were too shifty and they could get by him, or they could just pull up over him, and it left him, you know, down in defensive position while they were rising up. I think that was a major change they made, you know, going into game 5, game 6, game 7. And I guess, dude, we got up 3-1, so what am I talking about? But you know, it was pretty nasty to watch that thing fall apart. But to me, Sam Presti standing up and saying, we need 5 players that can defend 5 positions and 5 players that can shoot on the perimeter on the court at all times. That's, to me, the major lesson learned from that time.
Yeah, and I saw it then. You know, I saw that Steven Adams was a phenomenal defensive player when we played against teams with big men. But small ball, he was just out of sorts. And the same thing was with Cantor. You know, like when Cantor was out there, he was out of sorts and with smaller guys.
And they picked on him.
Completely. And that's how they, you know, smart teams do it. So when Sam decided to go away from the traditional big man, I think a lot of people don't understand it still. They think that this is a huge mistake and that we need to have a big man. But defense by committee, pick and rolls, you know, creating those isolation, you know, situations, it's all part of the game, and it's all part of what the Thunder are trying to do. Create the mismatch and score on your mismatch. That's as simple as it can be. And we, the way we set screens and picks and rolls and fades and you know, whatever, back doors, like it's all part of the greater idea and the greater plan of using a big man as more of a guard. And I, you know what, why not? Like, why wouldn't we be doing this? Like, right. Look at it. It's beautiful out there. It's a piece of art watching.
Yeah. I think what we would watch a lot of times with a team like the Rockets over the last, with the years they had Harden and they were really effective, was they wanted to run guys off screens, get the switches they wanted, isolate the individual defender they wanted with the offensive player they wanted, and then run an ISO set out of there. And what I've watched happen with the Thunder is they're wanting to initiate everything with a pass, create a series of passes that switch the ball from side to side, and then exploit the defense from that. It's different, but in the end, you're kind of looking at the same thing, right? You're picking your spots from a team's weakness. Now, we could try to do something like that with SGA going forward, where we do send him off of some screens and we can isolate him and we can put him on the wing with the defender that we want. All those types of things are in play when you move him to a position where he's scoring. And it's kind of interesting to think about if he really unleashes like his scoring side. Like I think we've seen some unbelievable scoring outputs by him, but if he really embraces that, like I heard Giddy talking about SGA really being capable of putting up 50 anytime he wants. Are we going to start seeing that?
You have to. We have to.
Yeah.
You know, like seriously, like, that's the thing about what Shea's moving to that position allows him to do is score whenever he wants. And if he's not able to score whenever he wants, then he has no place there. So that's what we need Shea to do. 22 shots a game, man. You know, yeah. that's what he needs to be doing, and doing 22 plus a game. Anytime that he does this, I feel like he's going to have an opportunity to score 30 plus points a game. And yeah,
if he goes to the free throw line, 10, 12 times, you know,
he's got to get there 10 or 12 times right now. I think he's only at 6 or 7 right now. So he's got to get that up. He's got to be more effective on that free throw line.
Yeah. A lot of times the way that he distributes has been attack, get into the lane, collapse the defense, and kick the ball out, which works, but he can still do that from the two. He probably won't see a shift in his assist, which means we can see this team start as a whole getting quite a few more assists, which will be nice to see. I'm not sure how many of SGA's baskets or whatever percentage of his baskets are assisted, but I'm guessing it's a pretty low number at this stage. What do you think?
Yeah. I do. I think when you're talking about assisted and, assisted shots and stuff like that, yeah, it has to be a low number right now. But, here's the thing about it. A good point guard are going to get those assist up numbers because they're going to find it in that open spot. And if you're making it so that Shea's never having a guy that's off him, that benefits the Oklahoma City Thunder because now you're playing 4-on-4, you know, get the Shea, the matchup that you guys want. You put Shea out in the corner once he has that. And now you're 4-on-4 with a young man that knows open spots like nobody's business. And, man, that benefits us in so many ways. So
how do you think we need to get him open? Because I did notice, like you said, so you've got Giddy with the ball on the strong side and the weak side you've got SGA. Now, most of the time, Giddy can thread a pass to the weak side, because the help defense will usually have a foot in the lane or thereabouts. So my question is, with SGA, they're not helping off him. They're staying in a spot where that pass does not get there.
Staying in his face, yeah.
So what do we do?
Oh, man, that's all about getting a post player or a bigger body. It could be Dort recognizing that and helping out. Listen, Shea can get open, right?
Right.
But here's the thing. When you're creating the screen that's going to create the mismatch that you want, right, and you're picking on whatever defender's weakness with Shea or whatever's defender's weakness on help defense or whatever it is, because the whole goal could be like, Shea, you go to the corner this game. Once you get your guy that we want you to have, you slide to that corner. This guy doesn't help out on defense, and we're going to get backdoor after backdoor after backdoor until they pull him out of the game. So they're going to be attacking certain defenders until those defenders come out of the game, and then they're going to start reset that with that, screen and roll or whatever it is that they're going to do to create that next defender to come out. Because, again, if that defender's not in his face and he has that shot or has that half a step on him when he pump fakes, he goes to the hole strong, that's what I would rather. But using Shea as a decoy isn't a horrible idea, especially if we're getting open buckets because of it.
What about using Shea as a screener?
Yeah, again, that's another thing. Is Shea as a screener, is Shea as a decoy yet again? Because you always have to guard him for a fade out or a rollout or, whatever that the screens that they do is with the screener, whether he fades or you know, whatever the term is that they do when they screen and fade, right? So you screen it and you fade out. Like, if Shea's doing that and the person that he screened for is going the opposite way, wide open bucket after wide open bucket. But again, there has to be, you have to be right. playing the right defense. It has to be playing the right defender. And it's all about that switch and making sure that Shea has that mismatch on him.
Yeah. One thing that I used to see Ray Allen and Reggie Miller do a lot, which would be set a screen and then run off a screen.
Yes.
You know, when you do that, you get really open.
Yeah, you're picking your defender. That's all they're doing.
Right.
And I think that's crucial for what Shea needs to do is that they need to have, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. These five guys need to play Shea. So how do we get that those five guys to get on Shea? And it's a lot of double screens you'll see, confusing the defense. So once those guys get on those our offensive guys, then we take it, pull them apart. But man, sometimes that takes, you know, 7, 8, 9 seconds after we've crossed half court, which puts us in a place that we've used, you know, 20 seconds on the shot clock or, you know, 17 seconds on the shot clock when we're doing that. So again, it's taking us later into the shot clock by doing, you know, playing this way. But I think this benefits us. A lot of teams are all about shoot quickly, shoot often, as fast as you can on the shot clock. The more shots we get, the better we'll play, whatever. But the way that we're playing is much more methodical. Yeah, once in a while we'll see us just jack up shots really, really quickly. But usually that's at the end of the quarter. We're playing 3-for-1 or 2-for-1 or whatever that fucking game that we're playing is that for that particular time. Because, I mean, there's been times that I'm like, holy shit, we literally came down and took that shot in 2 seconds into our shot clock. Why the hell would we do that? And then I start writing down. I'm like, oh, my God, like it makes sense because if we do that and then we go come down and we shoot this shot within 7 seconds and then we come back and shoot the shot within 8 seconds, then all of a sudden it doesn't matter what they do. We get the ball for 4 or 5 more times in the quarter. So there's a name to the game of all of it. And it's just about, you know, doing the numbers and watching what's happening. And I think that's why, you know, we look at what Josh Giddey has done. You know, right now for rebounds, Josh Giddey is third as a point guard for rebounds. 7.8 puts him at third, just above Russell Westbrook. And then you have Murray from San Antonio and Luka. Luka is averaging 9.1 right now. And then you, as far as shooting guards, though, he'd be second as shooting guard, Josh Giddey, as far as rebounds go. So Josh is renaming as far as what a guard does. I mean, we saw Luka do enormous numbers as far as point guard and rebounds go. So seeing what Josh is able to do right here, Mark, I'm getting excited because if Josh can continue to get these rebounds up and getting averaging nearly 2 offensive rebounds a game, this redirects everything in how we're doing stuff. And it excites me because, you know, having a point guard or a shooting guard that's able to rebound like our guys are, it makes it so that it's very difficult to guard us on every single level.
Dude, I love it, man. I'm pumped up about it. I'm ready to see it in action, but it's going to take some time. You know, I think it'll happen before the season is over, but either way, we're watching this team go through a transition, one that we didn't see coming quite as soon, but it's been really exciting. So, you got anything else to add?
Man, just tomorrow's game is going to be fun to watch for sure. Another game, another day.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow. And as always, this episode was brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief.